Welcome to the podcast. My name is Jamie Knight, and I'm a realtor with Real Broker right here in Cajun Country, Lafayette, Louisiana. The goal of this podcast is to provide massive value by bringing insider access to our area's top agents and find out how they've been able to achieve massive success in their business. My hope is that you take away a few things from their experiences to grow your own business. My guest today is fellow real agent Daniel Swear. Daniel is a second-generation forester. He focuses on forestry and wildlife management, and Daniel only sells land. Welcome to the podcast, Daniel.
Thank you, Jane.
Excited to have you, brother. So tell me how you got into this interesting business of forestry and how you got into the real estate business.
So my grandfather started the business in the 1960s. I'd say when I was early teens, I started working with him. I was cruising timber before I was driving a vehicle.
Nice.
Probably 12, 13 years old, started, and it worked with him throughout my high school years, high school summers. I spent in the woods cruising timber. At that time, they were cruising timber for the Army Corps of Engineers. So I can honestly say I've been in every bayou inside the Atchafalaya Basin. It took us a little over 2 years to do it, but we cruised for one of their easements they purchased within the Atchafalaya Basin. And then graduated from Louisiana Tech, and my grandfather and I merged for a few years, created Willis and Swear LLC. He retired around 2008, and it's been myself since then.
Gotcha. So tell us a little bit about the land that you manage, too, because it's a large bunch of tracts of land.
So my clientele range anywhere from, it might be as small as, say, 10, 15 acres, to some of the property owners have over 50,000 acres. Overall, I manage around 250,000 acres in Louisiana. I'm also assist a lot of right-of-way companies to do oil and gas. Let's say a new pipeline is running a new route and they need experts to help them with the timber, purchase timber rights. So I assist them with that and go as far as expert witnessing within the court cases if they are going to be expropriating. Also do wildlife management and help a lot of my clients manage their recreational goals as far as any kind of hunting, might be deer hunting, squirrel hunting, duck hunting, and so forth.
Gotcha. Awesome, man. So tell us how you got into the real estate sales, because in the intro I said you only sell land. So talk to us about like when you got into the real estate business and when you decided it was time for me to be a realtor.
So I'd say 2005, I started with the forestry company, actually owning the company. Willis and Swear was created in 2005. Around 10 years ago, I just decided I had already been helping my clients put together these deals as far as they're buying these large tracts of land and turning them onto it, helping them. I'm taking the property after the sale and helping manage it, but I was showing them the property and my hands were tied. I could only do so much with them. I guess about 10 years ago, a friend of mine called me. He said, look, I enrolled you into the a real estate class. You're going to go get your real estate license. I said, really? I said, yeah. So I went, took the course, and I guess the rest is history.
Yeah, absolutely. So you focus primarily on land. And we were joking the other day that you literally capped the other day in one transaction, right? You're not doing necessarily small lots. You're doing thousands of acre tracts at the same time.
I do handle some smaller sales at times, but usually it's pretty large.
Yeah.
You know, might be 1,000, 2,000. I've sold as much as a little over 4,000 acres in one transaction.
Nice. So tell us about that moment, because you stood up in a meeting the other day amongst new agents getting into the MLS. You said what?
I guess that was when I was first getting in with realtors. We were in the meeting introducing ourselves and saying what brokerage we're with and what we do. And I said, I'm with Real Broker and I only sell land. And everybody looked at him and said, what do you mean you only sell land? I said, I only sell land, land and timber. I don't do anything with a house. I don't want to do anything with a house. That is not my lane, and I don't want to. I know what land is, and I know how to manage the land and proceed with the land.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, so they're probably like, man, here's this forester stand up here selling millions of dollars worth of land every year, and you're with this kind of techie up and coming brokerage, and I think it's just so interesting, you know. So to have been in that room would have been funny, you know, to kind of see that. But how have you been liking the techie side of the company and everything? I know you're just, you know, you just want to manage land and be out in the woods, but how are you liking the whole technology side of the company?
Well, I love it. So my job is, even though it's in the woods, I'm very in depth in technology because we deal with a lot of GIS, GPS, geographic information systems, along with GPSs, a lot of computer software to determine, you know, volumes of trees. And so I love the technology side. I think I'm one or two classes shy of a minor in GIS. Technology side was great. I come in my career, real estate career, I've actually been through a few real estate companies. Some of them were decent size. Several were mom and pops. They had nothing wrong with them, but there was not, or I didn't have the support as I do now.
Right.
With the other agents and just that the whole real system, it really supports and it really helps me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And I'm sure being able to kind of do a transaction and input your paperwork and keep everything in the cloud and everything's got to be helpful for everything else that you're doing on your computer out in the field, that you can automatically just keep track of your sales and mm-hmm. where you are in transactions and all of that stuff.
It's kind of funny. I use the a lot of the transaction. If you open up mine, I have a folder for Real and then I have a folder for Willis and Swear. I use it for my business as well.
You gotcha. Yeah, well, that's interesting. So tell us about what's kind of important to people who are purchasing land. Like, what are they interested in? Like, what specifically, like, would you say if they're, let's just say a buyer is interested in buying a 3,000 acre tract, what kind of things is important to them in a purchase of 3,000 acres?
Like, so number one, when I meet up with any potential landowner, any landowner or potential landowner, first thing I'm going to ask is their goals. What are they looking for? Are they buying land for investment, number one, or is investment secondary to recreational value? Around here, recreational value, when I'm calling recreational, I'm really talking about hunting. That takes the cake. People spend a lot of money on quality hunting land. Now, in order to make it quality hunting land, you have to have the habitat, which comes with the forest management. So you have this, they're working together. And meeting with these landowners, if they tell me that, look, we're interested in, I want my land to cash flow. That is the primary thing. But I love hunting. So let's make a cash flow, but hunting is secondary. So now I'm looking for properties that you're going to be able to cash flow them either through the timber management, but either cutting and selling of timber, might be some government programs available, different kind of easements, might be some practices that the government or another entity might pay for. The sky's the limit.
Gotcha. Interesting. So talk about those government programs for a little bit, because I mean, we were out at a friend's property and you were getting some things set up for, what was it, like monarch butterflies or something like that. So tell us a little bit about some of these government programs that maybe people who are listening to this podcast have never even heard of as a possibility.
Right. Well, there are many government programs out there and basically have two different kinds. One's going to pay you for an easement. And the other is going to pay you for practices. Well, the easement such as WRP, CRP, those kind of things. A lot like a WRP is a one-time payment. CRP, they pay annually.
What does that even mean?
But a Wetland Reserve Program, and I'm sorry, that was the old acronym. Now is WRE, Wetland Restoration Easement, or CRP, which is Conservation. Anyway, it's a program. I can't remember.
So
what
something
the R
to do
is.
But
basically, what those do is the government puts trees in the ground and you're not allowed to touch them while they're growing. And that's all there is to it. You're putting trees in the ground, letting them grow, taking it out of agriculture use, putting back into the original use, which would be timberland, and letting the trees grow. Now, you have these other programs out there, such as CSB and EQIP, and there's a few more. Some's through the federal government, well, some's through FSA, others are through, might be Department of Wildlife, might be Louisiana Wildlife and Fisheries, it might be U.S. Fish and Wildlife. But those, a lot of other programs pay for practices, and those are the ones I prefer to use. They're short-term contracts, but they pay to for you to enhance and better your property, either for wildlife or for timber use.
Gotcha.
So, and when I say by doing practices such as that monarch butterfly, if you have an opening that's not really doing anything, just growing weeds, and you bush hog it every year, well, let's put some type of seed source. They have a couple of native grasses that you can plant with, say, a milkweed additive, and now you have a pollinator. It allows to feed the monarch butterfly, which is kind of a big thing now, but other birds and butterflies and so forth. And the government pays you to do it.
Gotcha. So what does that even look like from a cost standpoint? Like how many, I mean, what would somebody even expect to, let's just say for a 10 acre tract of this milkweed product, like what would that even net somebody if they did that?
If I remember right, if you planted it, the government's going to pay you a little, like for the milkweed part, a little over $1,000 an acre, might be $1,200 an acre. The seed sources, the seed is going to cost you about $500 an acre. So you might make a $500, you know, per acre just to plant, but it's also, you not only you're making a few dollars, but you're also the primary thing, you're enhancing your property.
Gotcha. Interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously down here is probably a little bit different than in other states, maybe some in the South. But, you know, for us, we have a lot of hunting possibilities and stuff like that. So talk to us a little bit about like what that looks like from, you know, the hunting perspective.
Let me make sure I understand as far as like the hunting perspective, like the deer hunters, the
duck
hunters.
Yeah, I mean, what are people looking for, I guess, like in land in Louisiana? I mean, they just specifically deer hunting is pretty much all they're looking for.
So here, squirrel hunting is big.
Gotcha.
Deer hunting is probably the biggest, but you also have a lot of duck hunters.
Yeah.
And, but then you have the small game, rabbit, squirrel, but typically when we talk about recreational value, we're talking about deer hunting and duck hunting. But the deer hunting, you're trying to, so as a management tool, you are in management, you want to be able to hold the deer. You want to be able to draw them onto the property. But in my designs, a lot of things that I do when I go to visit a property, I look at the big picture, but then I also focus on the smaller things. How are they accessing the property? Because if you access the property wrong, you're going to force those animals out, or it'll pressure them into becoming nocturnal and you don't get to see any of the game you have. So the other day I have hunting property here in St. Landry Parish, and it's not uncommon for me to go see 20, 30 deer in a hunt. And now I'm not shooting everything. I only shoot this select few animals, but I'm out there enjoying the wildlife. My wife has never killed a deer, but she loves to go and watch the ducks swim in the slough and watch the deer come out, and she'll take pictures of the deer with her phone while she's wearing a bright pink sweater or something. It's different. In St. Landry Parish, that's kind of not common.
Gotcha. Interesting. Well, yeah, we'll talk about maybe what's important to a seller when they're selling their property? Is it just price, or I mean, is it the right person that buys it so that they can kind of continue on? Like, what's important for a seller? Like, when you're meeting with these guys who are like, man, I've got 4,000 acres that I need to sell. Like, what's important to them in the process?
Well, I can tell you, I have some land listed right now, and the landowner told me what one of the older owners told me flat out. They don't want to sell it to somebody who's not going to take care of the property. It doesn't matter if they're going to give us asking price. So that a lot of these older landowners want the land to go to somebody who's going to take care of their property the same way they did.
Gotcha.
So it, of course, price is always important, but it's a lot of these landowners, they don't want to see somebody just go and cut all the trees and not care about and rut the property and not replant, not take care of the property. They want somebody to go in there and actually manage it and try to enhance and develop the property into something better.
Gotcha. Interesting. Yeah. And I can feel that from a lot of these guys, because I mean, you spend so much time and effort, you know, cultivating this thing. And in some cases, these properties have been in the same family for hundreds of years. Yeah. And it's something that was passed down to them and in multiple generations. So, but what else, how do you price these things too? So you've got these large tracts of lands. I mean, how do you even go about like giving these guys an actual price value? Is it just on sales comparable or money generated? How do you even price land in that large tract?
So that's something I actually learned from some appraisers that are really good friends of mine. So we start with bare dirt. We're going to have a bare dirt value that comes from comparables. Then I have to add in maybe recreational value. Then I have to add in the timber value and any other values that might. Sorry,
that's all good. Yeah, and we're out here in Daniel's greenhouse that he just built for his wife. So we'll share some pictures of that, and you can hear the roosters crowing because I say we can't interview a forester inside of a house or something. We got to come somewhere cool, man. Be around the nature. So I'm gonna let you pick up on that topic. Right. Of we're talking about what was important to a seller. You talked about using dirt as a base value,
right? So, okay. So expanding on that, you have your bare dirt value that comes from comparables. Then you're going to add recreational value, might be hunting, might be even fishing. You might have some bayous adjacent to it. So and so forth. But then you also have to have timber value. Now that is probably one of the biggest, that is one of the biggest areas that people miss. Though is the timber value.
Gotcha.
Just because it looks like one property next door to another, even though it looks the same, it may not be the same timber value. The trees might be a little bit taller on this property than this property, and that might give you a 25% difference in price.
Wow.
It can change very, very quickly. And that's where the forestry part comes into it. So I can turn, I can look at those properties and I can do what's called a windshield cruise, and I can get pretty close to values just by looking at the timber instead of doing a full blown timber cruise.
Gotcha. Interesting. Yeah. So a tree that might be 10 years older than another one might have a vastly different value from a timber perspective.
Absolutely.
Gotcha. Or what type of trees that are located on the property too?
Type of trees are very, very, that is probably the biggest. I mean, cypress trees, and for example, is probably triple the price.
Really?
A pine? Than a regular, just say, sweet gum or a regular hardwood tree.
Interesting. So as a buyer, what would you say would be the most important thing that these people are kind of looking for? And I guess it just depends, but where are these buyers even coming from? Are they coming from inside the state? Are they coming out of state? I mean, where are these buyers coming from? And like, what's important to these buyers?
A lot of the people that are looking at buying land, they're wanting it. They're wanting, of course, a nice piece of property, but they're wanting something that they can enjoy, that their families can enjoy. A lot of them are looking for the recreational value. Now, once they have that recreational that recreational value there. Then we start talking, okay, well, how much can I bring back? How much money is this? Can I cash flow? If I take out a loan, can I cash flow that loan? That's where my forestry practices come in. And we talk about 10 and 15 and 20 year plans and how much money they can expect throughout time.
Yeah. And most of that, you talk about income, the largest part of income is definitely through timber. Is that, or is there more? And so is that the largest part of the income that somebody can make is timber is probably the most important on that income chart?
Most of the time, that's the plan, unless we have some other type of easements. So you have, of course, oil. Oil's your biggest.
Gotcha.
If you're lucky enough to get a big oil well, you're going to buy many more acres of property.
Gotcha.
So the secondary, now we have these carbon credits. And we're trying to work through that. And I'll be honest with you, I have not been not been lucky enough to figure out how to work through all of these carbon credit purchases. And I've even done carbon sequestration studies in college, so I understand it, but I can't get through the government side of the carbon credits. How do you get the money from the government to the landowner? There's too many hands in between, and
gotcha.
None of my clients have been successful.
So first would be oil production. Second, potentially, would be government credits. And then third would be what? Timber?
Timber. I'd say timber would probably be second. Then you got all the carbon credits, government programs. That all kind of falls into that timber value.
Gotcha. And then recreational will be in there somewhere with having somebody lease and their land.
If they want to, most of the landowners are not buying it to lease. Most of them are buying it for themselves.
Gotcha. So they're not interested in leasing it out typically.
Correct.
To other people to come on their land to hunt. But that would be something that somebody could purchase land for and allow other people to hunt.
Absolutely.
For a price. Gotcha. Very interesting, man. So what kind of challenges are you having right now? Are you having any in selling land?
Really? The last couple of years has been the economy. It's been just a little slower with and the interest rates. But mostly a lot of people that are buying land, of course, they have 1031 money. They want to, they're looking to buy. They sold something in real estate and they want to keep their money in real estate. So no, but really no issues. I mean, I have a list of people that are constantly looking for properties. Now there's a lot shorter list of people that can afford 1,000 acres versus 200.
Right.
But when I have these larger tracts, it's a little bit harder to sell.
Yeah. So you have a checklist. I'm sure you go down. If you got a big track of land, you're reaching out to these people proactively and, hey, here's what I got coming up. Here's what it is. Are you interested?
Yes,
so you're noticing some of these guys that own large tracts of land are obviously looking to acquire more large tracts
absolutely.
Of land. Absolutely. Gotcha.
And a lot of so the other thing you can look at with land is the type of land. That's another big factor in timber investment. So hardwood, which is around here, Cajun country is predominantly hardwood. And your rate of return's a lot slower, a lot less, because you're like on a timber thinning, you're only going to do that once every 30 years, 25 to 30 years. So you don't want to visit that site too often. Hardwood trees grow a lot slower. However, when you go a little north and west of here, you get into the pine country. Well, you put trees in the ground as a seedling that are a foot tall. In 15 years, you got your first thinning. In 8 to 10 years later, you got another thinning. 8 to 10 years later, you got another thinning. 8 to 10 years later, you're clear cutting it and starting over planting trees in the ground.
Gotcha.
So the rate of return on pine is a lot quicker. So, but the recreational value, the quality of deer in pine are typically not as good as in the hardwood.
Interesting. So what would you describe as hardwood, like cypress trees?
No,
oak trees.
Hardwood is more oak, just bottomland hardwoods. It's going to be oak, ash, hackberry. It's you know, basically anything other than pine trees. You get into the pine country, you can get some upland hardwood areas, but they're almost always typically mixed with pine.
Gotcha. So I guess that affects the value too when you're figuring out the price of this thing. Is it a pine play or is it a hardwood play?
You can buy pine land a lot cheaper than you can hardwood. And that has to do with the recreational value.
Gotcha.
Even though the investment value is better buying pine, it's your recreational value that drives it up, drives the hardwood up more.
Gotcha. So it's not so much the cutting cost, it's that you have a lot of value from being able to have the type of animals you find in the hardwood forest and stuff like that. Gotcha, man. Super interesting. Yeah, Daniel, man, when I first heard your stories and got to hang out with you a little bit and hearing everything that you had, I was just blown away by how interesting that it was. And as realtors, we, you know what we know, and we know a little bit about residential homes, and we, you know that. It was just so interesting to hear you talk about forestry and, you know, wildlife management and what something was worth, and just everything was just so interesting. So I appreciate you, you know, kind of sharing that with us. But if you've got somebody who is listening to this thing and they're in another state and they're interested in maybe expanding or going into more land, what would you tell that realtor who's listening?
Well, if you're not a forester or a forestry consultant, let me be very specific about that. So technically, my company is a consulting firm. I am there for the land owners. When you say a forester, there are lots of different types of foresters. You have foresters that are buying timber only. You have some that work for large companies. You have some that work for logging companies. You have even foresters that work for the federal government as a forest ranger. But I am a consulting forester that is there for the landowner. And I would say, meet some local consulting foresters. Ask their opinions on timber values try to include them, because they have a knowledge, even if they don't. There's a lot of them that don't sell real estate, and they have a knowledge that could definitely help you.
Gotcha. So start with the foresters, get some knowledge, because yeah, to be a good steward to a seller, I'm sure you know, knowledge is powerful when you're talking about a large tract of land and you're talking about a large amount of money. Obviously, knowledge is important to either seek that knowledge out from a forester or somebody that actually knows values of land and not just purely compare one tract to another and
exactly.
hope that you're doing the seller a good service.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Very interesting. Well, yeah, just like we would consult an appraiser on something we're not 100% sure of in the residential space, I'm sure it's smart to consult with a forester, consult with somebody who actually does land management and recreational management and be able to have some idea on what you're doing so that you're not giving the property away.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
And you're doing your seller a great service. So anyway, Daniel, thank you so much, brother, for being a part of it. And man, we'll put some of your contact information. I don't even know sure. if you're out a lot on social media out there, but I'm sure if anybody's interested in hearing what Daniel has to say or connecting with him future, man, we'll definitely try to put some of his information out there in the podcast, man, so that people can connect with you. But Daniel, appreciate it, my brother.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And awesome, man. So I hope you guys are enjoying the podcast, man. We're just trying to bring a lot of value and some interesting insights from different people around our community in Louisiana. So if you're interested in the podcast, go on one of our platforms and like the podcast, share the podcast with somebody that you might find something like this interesting with. And I hope that you guys are enjoying it. And I hope that you guys have an amazing day.